Michael Riedel in the morning on The Voice of New York.
710 WOR.
Hey, good morning to you, everyone, on a Wednesday. It's March the 28th. It's a day before opening day. Good morning to you, Michael Riedel. How are you?
I'm fine, Len. How are you?
Did you speak to any Republicans last night? When we convened at this time yesterday, you had spoken the night before to the Women's Republican Club of New York, and they proceeded to trash me and said they couldn't listen to me on the radio, these Republican women. So did you speak to anyone last night?
I did not, but this is how touchy, this is how thin-skinned Len is. So yeah, so I ran into some Republican women on Monday night who are not big fans of yours, but I told them to give you a chance. So the first thing I get when I leave the studio, I get an email from Len because a woman tweeted, "I can't stand that Michael Riedel. He just uses all those Trump talking points." And Len sends me this email gleefully, just showing I have people who, my detractors are out there as well, just like yours.
Interesting that you brought up that tweet.
I knew he was going to read it on the air this morning. I knew he was going to read it.
It comes from Nelly.
Oh, wait a minute. I had not even gotten home, all right? I left the studio. I was walking home. And there is the tweet from this woman who does not like me, forwarded to me by Len.
Nelly, Len, I can't listen to your show anymore until you get rid of that Michael Riedel. I can't stand his voice. He's a typical pushy Republican Trump supporter who thinks he knows it all and is so full of himself. Watch out for him or he'll take over the show.
She's right about that part. That's that's what she's right about. It's soon going to be
Michael Riedel in the morning.
Michael Riedel and Len Berman in the morning, and then it's just going to be Michael Riedel in the morning.
I have a great idea for a show because later this morning we have Bo Diddle coming up.
I love Bo.
At 8:23.
Diddle and Riedel in the morning.
I think it should be Riedel and Diddle in the morning.
Riedel and Diddle in the morning. That's it.
Diddly, diddly,
I hope you're listening, Bo. Bo, we're having a little strategy planning session after the show here to figure out how we're going to knife Len in the back and take over.
By the way, there's so many stories today. I don't know where to begin, but I can't get these sounds and images out of my mind from yesterday outside St. Patrick's Cathedral, the funeral for firefighter Michael Davidson. It started just as we were going off the air yesterday. And they brought in his casket on the back of a fire truck, Michael. Obviously, that's going to begin our big three this morning, the somber funeral for firefighter Michael Davidson.
And his brother, Eric Davidson, also a firefighter, gave the eulogy.
We'll hear from some of that a little bit later on. And the first lawsuit is already flying from that fire, taking aim at Ed Norton's production company because they were filming a movie there, and one of the residents in that apartment is going after Norton. And
$7 million lawsuit filed against Ed Norton's production company by Erica Cruz, who lives in the building, or lived in the building, 773 St. Nicholas Avenue up there in Harlem. She claims that there was a highly flammable equipment in the basement where the blaze is believed to have started, that the production company had highly flammable equipment. Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer here, but of course a movie set is going to have highly flammable equipment. They have lots of lights, and they have generators, and they have cables. I've been on a movie set, so I don't. And no one has said that the fire was started by any of that equipment. So just because there was highly flammable equipment there, is that grounds for a lawsuit? I don't know.
Yeah, most of that.
Of course, everyone sues all the time here.
Got an email from one of our loyal listeners. Calls himself Matt the Plumber. He lives in Floral Park, which is the hometown of Michael Davidson, the firefighter.
Yeah.
And he emailed me that his family is going to have free plumbing and heating as long as I'm around.
Oh, good.
So from one of our loyal listeners. So, Matt, good job. Matt usually emails me to disagree with just about everything I say in a good-natured way.
Right.
But that's a good thing.
There's a very touching.
You're a good guy.
There's a very touching picture in the New York Post, my newspaper today. Daddy's Always With You, where Michael's Engine 69 helmet is being presented to his 3-year-old daughter, Emily, and his wife, Eileen. Very beautiful kids, beautiful kids. He left behind 3 daughters and a son.
I hate to segue into the next item, but also in the big three, and I just want the audience to know this was Michael Riedel's idea. He's going to pin this on me, Joe, but this was his idea for the big three. The president remaining uncharacteristically silent on the Stormy Daniels case.
It was in your potential big three as well. You know,
I did not have it in there. My original big three did not have that in there.
I was watching your network last night, okay? CNN, your network, Len's network.
My network is WOR Radio and iHeart Radio. That is my network.
The only thing Len ever watches is CNN. Wall-to-wall Stormy Daniels coverage. All they did last night was Stormy Daniels coverage. That's all that was on last night.
What's your point? I don't understand your point.
Because they're trying to bring down this president with Stormy Daniels, but because they're a serious news organization, they don't want to seem tawdry with all the pornography and the spanking and the details. They then go, oh, but this could be a violation of campaign finance laws. But that's how they get away with going into the tawdry stuff.
You know what I think they're trying to do? I think they're trying to goad the president into saying something. Because that's why hasn't he said anything?
Twitter
why
silence.
He said anything? And you know he loves to strike back.
Yeah. He does.
Yeah.
But he has
they want him to
here.
Take the bait.
Yeah. Well, he took the bait on his first tweet in 2 days? He tweeted this morning about the Second Amendment. Right. The Second Amendment will never go away because of the
That's a big story. That's a big story, too. Yeah. Justice John Paul Stevens, former Supreme Court Justice, has called for the repeal of the Second Amendment, which I believe is what you liberals, Len, fundamentally want to have happened.
Well,
that's what you want to have happen.
In capital letters, he wrote, the Second Amendment will never be repealed. But then, he just tweeted something about North Korean, looking forward to our meeting, Kim Jong-un. So he is tweeting today, but not about Stormy Daniels.
Just because you guys continue to ask the same question over and over and over again doesn't mean that we have to keep coming up with new things to say. We've addressed it. We've addressed it extensively, and there's nothing new to add to this conversation.
Well, that's Sarah Huckabee Sanders. The truth of the matter is they have not addressed it extensively.
Get on with the people's business.
Okay, that's fine.
Get on with the people's business.
Rounding out the big three, this is your big story. Michael was so excited by this. Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio, they're at it again. Cuomo wants to know why de Blasio hasn't been charged with corruption. I'll bet you de Blasio wants to know the same thing about Cuomo.
Exactly. I mean, the hatred between these two guys is unbelievable. I've never seen two politicians from the same party despise each other as much as they do. And Cuomo just came out of nowhere yesterday saying, I think de Blasio should be charged with accepting this money from Singh, as so Singh claims.
But he should be careful because he should be charged too.
Cuomo,
because he
per Coco.
For not only that, there's another one coming up with this project he did out in Buffalo.
Buffalo, yeah.
There were apparently kickbacks there, but he had this corruption commission that he established.
Yes.
And shut it down when it started looking at him.
When is de Blasio going to come out and hit back at him? I don't think de Blasio said anything about Cuomo now being investigated and Cuomo's ethics problems.
No, he hasn't done that yet, but...
You know, we're going to have, later on in the show, we're going to have Bo Deedle on. I'm sure Bo is going to have a lot of things to say about, as he calls him, our big bird mayor de Blasio.
That was the Moreland Commission that Joe was alluding to. So Cuomo starts this Moreland Commission to talk about corruption and look into it. And as soon as they started to look at some of Cuomo's stuff, he says,
No
more there. Commission. We've accomplished everything we've set out to do. Oh, man.
And Singh testifying in the Mangano trial.
Well, is it the Mangano trial or is it de Blasio
trial? It's become
the
de Blasio trial. It really has become the de Blasio trial.
Yeah.
And now he's saying that de Blasio knew about this cash that was funneled to him.
Well, I think the attempt on Mangano's team is, hey, this is the way business is done.
Right. Everybody does it, including the mayor.
This is what happens when you're a politician. Yeah.
And this is why we elected Donald Trump, because he was a billionaire and he's above that kind of mucky financial fray, Len.
Well, I hope so. I certainly hope so. We shall see when Mr. Mueller gets through and when the
that's Russian collusion.
Election commission gets through with Stormy. All right. Rounding out the big three, I mentioned Cuomo and de Blasio, but I also want to mention that at 7:30 and 8:30 we have Mets tickets, but now
special tickets.
You didn't know about this. This is news to you. Special tickets because you and I get our own set of tickets.
We do, yeah.
And since we can't always go to the game, we give those tickets to our listeners. So at 7:30, my personal seats, and at 8:30, your personal seats, and they're good tickets.
But what happens if I don't want to give away my personal seats?
Well, then don't. Go to the game.
Oh, really?
See it's my choice.
See if that works.
Wait, I'm having second thoughts about giving away my tickets this morning.
Well, who do you care about more, you or our loyal listeners?
The loyal listeners win out all the
betcha.
Time. They can have my seats. All right.
Speaking of the Mets, we're excited because Mickey Callaway, the brand new manager of the Mets, really good guy, and we're wishing him well. He's going to be our special guest at 7:40, although I'm a little bit concerned, guys, because Mickey Callaway rang the closing bell yesterday at the New York Stock Exchange, and the Dow dropped 344 points.
That's not a good sign.
And I've said this before, but I always find it, it wasn't Mickey. He was surrounded by some other people from First Data Corporation. But the Dow drops 344 points. The closing bell rings, and they're standing up there going like, what are they applauding? The Dow just dropped 344 points, and all they're... It's the silliest thing in
the
world.
They're applauding a buying opportunity. Whenever the Dow drops, I call my broker and I put in an order for some stuff. You know, I know you don't know much about economics, Len, but you're supposed to buy low and sell high.
I buy high, sell low.
He's still holding on to his Kodak stock.
Yeah, well, GE, which actually went up a few pennies. And my, horse and buggy stock. I think they're coming back. I really do.
Oh, but yeah,
horse and buggies
the futures for whale
back.
Oil is very, very exciting, Len.
And, of course, we mentioned Bo Dietl. And down the road, it's going to be Riedel and Dietl in the morning.
Exactly.
It's Bo Dietl joins us at 8:23. Always colorful. What the hell does he do for a living? We'll ask him. Bo Dietl.
You don't want to know. Trust me.
Coming up. Well, coming up next. Good morning, everyone. Glad you could be with us on a Wednesday. When we return, we're going to remember a fallen hero. Thousands turned out to pay their respects to firefighter Michael Davidson. And, of course, the lawsuit has been filed in connection with the fire as well. That's all coming up when we return. Plus, your next chance is $1,000 coming up at 7:05 here on 710 WOR. First up, Bernie Vider with traffic.
WOR.
Good morning, everybody, at 6:24. Good morning to you, Len.
Good morning to you, Michael Riedel, on a Wednesday, and I guess it's going to be a little cool, but...
Did you see the funeral for Michael Davidson on television yesterday?
Well, I saw a lot of the clips. And,
yeah, very moving.
It was moving. I mean,
very moving.
Saw all of those firemen outside. And,
in front of St. Patrick's.
Yeah.
And the hearse, the casket arrived on the back of a fire truck.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah. And I thought his brother, Michael Davidson's brother, Eric Davidson, spoke very, very well about Michael. Let's hear what.
He's also a firefighter. Eric.
The whole family's firefighter.
Dad,
the father was a firefighter. Yeah, but the brother I thought was very eloquent yesterday.
Here's Eric.
I'm never going to get to celebrate a Mets or Jets championship with my brother, but then I paused. And quickly realized that we could have lived till we were 100 years old and still probably not have got to see that happen.
Hey!
You know what?
A sober funeral picking on the Jets and the Mets? Come on, hey!
Hey, no, you know what? You were just telling me about my Mets tickets. I'm going to give my Mets tickets to Eric Davidson if he wants to take...
somebody. Yeah, we should offer some tickets to the family.
Absolutely.
No, but that's obviously bring a little bit of levity to the occasion. For Eric Davidson, the brother.
In May of 2003, when he joined the FDNY, Michael became a hero of the people of New York City. But to me, Michael has been my hero my entire life.
Killed in that fire up there in Harlem last week. De Blasio was on hand at the funeral, of course, as well. What did he have to say?
This whole city knows that Lieutenant Michael Davidson was a hero of the highest order.
And here's some more from the mayor.
Our city is in pain today. We're in mourning. We're in mourning for this good family. We're in mourning for our fire department.
That's little kids.
Well, let's see. He had four kids, Brooke 7, Joseph 6, Emily 3, and Amy 1, and a lovely wife, Eileen. And I'm really touched by a picture that's in the Post now of a fireman is presenting Michael's hat. It says Engine 69 on it to 3-year-old Emily.
Mm.
Yeah.
This is some more from Brother Eric.
We'd also like to thank the city of New York and the FDNY for the amazing job they have done over the past few days
for taking care of our family.
Yeah, they step up. They really do. You know, I mentioned an email from a fella who listens to our show, who lives in the same town in Flora Park. He said he waited. He went to the wake. He said he waited for 2 hours and couldn't get in.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
So there was that much of a huge turnout out in Floral Park for the week.
And we had WOR's Alice Stockton Rossini there yesterday, and she said that there were firemen from around the country who happened to be in the city, maybe just here on vacation or here as tourists, but they heard about this, and they showed up at St. Patrick's yesterday, too, to attend this.
Joe, do firemen do what the police do? Because the police do travel around the country when there's a police killing. Do firemen travel from around the
point,
country?
Yeah, absolutely. They make it a point of sending a delegation or at least a couple of guys to these funerals, especially when it's high profile like this.
And Cardinal Dolan, of course, at St. Patrick's, delivering the eulogy.
Jesus and Michael have quite a bit in common. Michael might blush to hear that, but say it we do. Jesus came to give life and to save life. So did firefighter Michael Davidson.
Yeah, good point.
I love listening to Cardinal Dolan.
You know, we spoke yesterday to some people from the neighborhood up in Harlem attended the funeral.
Yeah.
And they said that Michael was very well liked in the neighborhood. And when the firemen had the barbecues and whatnot, he was always there playing with the kids at the barbecues, knew the people in the neighborhood there. So he was really part of that community in Harlem.
And the neighbors in Floral Park were saying how actually the day before this fire, he was out helping neighbors and kids and shovel snow in the neighborhood and driveways. Just sounds like it's just a terrific, what a tragedy. Yeah. And now, of course, the inevitable, the other shoe, there's a lawsuit.
We've got the lawsuit now. So one of the tenants in that building up in Harlem, which was 773 St. Nicholas Avenue, Erica Gruz is suing Ed Norton's production company. He was making Motherless in Brooklyn, I think is the name of the movie there. And she is now suing Ed Norton's production company for $7 million, claiming that on the set of the movie, there was highly flammable equipment in the basement where the blaze is believed to have started. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but of course there's highly flammable equipment on a movie set. They have big lights, they've got cables, they've got generators, they have the Kraft food truck. They have all sorts of things that are flammable. So I don't understand what the point of the suit is. No one has determined if anything of that equipment, if anything from that movie set started the fire.
That's a great point.
Just if the equipment's there, they're making a movie. Of course they're going to have movie equipment there.
Yeah, you made a great point there. I mean, they haven't even determined the cause of the fire and someone's suing already. Obviously there's some lawyer up there.
Absolutely.
Some ambulance chaser up
jumping
there.
Jumping in and taking advantage of this horrific situation, naturally. All right, let's get to the 6:30 news with Joe Bartlett.
All righty, Michael. And land authorities searching for a detainee who escaped the custody of immigration officials last night. This unidentified man was being transferred to Terminal 4 at Kennedy Airport, going from one flight to another. Somehow, he eluded officials. They took his handcuffs off. Then he gets into a taxi and boom, he's gone.
Who is he, Houdini?
Well, I don't know. He's pretty good at escaping anyway, but they do describe him as a violent deportee, and he has previously been arrested on weapons charges. So be careful, he's out there. President Trump still quiet after porn star Stormy Daniels claimed that they had a one-night stand. The White House press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, asked about it, of course, yesterday, and says the president has already denied the allegation.
Just because you guys continue to ask the same question over and over and over again doesn't mean that we have to keep coming up with new things to say. We've addressed it. We've addressed it extensively, and there's nothing new to add to this conversation.
Refresh my memory.
She directed that answer at that annoying CNN reporter who really gets under her skin.
Jeff Zeleny.
He's the one who kept asking about Stormy Daniels over and over, because that's all CNN wants to talk about, Len.
Refresh my memory, Joe and Michael. When did the president address this extensively? When has the White House extensively addressed it? Go.
His lawyers.
He said fake news on Monday.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That was it.
Extensive.
Over and done with, Len. Move on.
Fake.
MoveOn.org.
Now, Len.
What?
What's he going to say? What do you want to say?
Yeah, she spanked me.
What do you want to say?
Well, if.
What do you want to say?
Don't you think he should? He tweets about everyone. He tweets and insults everybody.
Here's what he should say.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
All right, that's
and
a start.
And now I have to move on to the people's business.
All right, that's a start. You don't think he should address any of this stuff?
No.
Nothing?
No.
He's okay, fine.
Len, he is far too dignified for that.
Well, you know, he's tweeting up a storm this morning, but he's talking about guns in North Korea. I call that distraction. Go ahead. What do you call it?
I call it doing his job.
Yeah, Len,
okay,
come on.
Fine. Right. You guys are going to just defend anything he does. That's fine.
No, I mean, what do you want to get from this?
Something.
Yeah, she spanked me.
Just don't lie to the American people. We've addressed it extensively. They haven't addressed it at all.
He's denied it.
Our news at 6:30 brought to you by Gary Goldberg. Financial services. Schedule a free consultation by visiting ggfs.com. All right, look, it seems like Disney has had every kind of princess over the years. Apparently, they may have missed a few.
Ooh.
Oh.
Planned Parenthood tweeting.
Oh, no.
Yeah, oh, no.
Oh, no. What, a pregnant princess?
No. A Disney princess who's had an abortion.
No, really?
Are you kidding me?
Come on.
Wait, Planned Parenthood wants Disney to have a princess who's had an abortion?
And they also add, we need a Disney princess who's pro-choice. We need a Disney princess who's an undocumented immigrant. We need a Disney princess who's actually a union worker.
How about a Disney princess out on parole after murdering her husband?
How about
one of those?
How about a Disney princess who's a porn star who claims she had a one-night stand with a president?
Oh, that's good. Oh, I like that one. Let it go. Let it go.
Spank me, princess. It's a spank me, princess.
Planned Parenthood did take down the tweet.
Okay.
Well, I hope so.
Hey, yesterday we spoke to the great songwriter and performer Valerie Simpson. She wrote, of course, Ain't No Mountain High Enough. And she is now on Broadway in Chicago playing Mama Morton. So we're going to hear that interview. It was a lot of fun yesterday, Len.
It was. It really was.
So that's coming up next. Plus, your chance at $1,000 is coming up at 7:05 on 710 WOR. And now let's check in with Bernie Viter and traffic.
WOR.
It is 6:40. Good morning, everyone. If you're new to our broadcast, I'm Len Berman. I spent a lifetime behind bars doing sports. And Michael Reno,
when you say bars, you mean bars where you drink? Isn't that where you old sports
really
casters?
Well,
you
were on the road.
You and Warner Wolf knocking it back there when you were following the Mets or whoever was on the road?
When you're on the road covering basketball, which I did also in other sports. Yeah, you've been known to have a drink or two after the game. But Michael Riedel, of course, the longtime Post Broadway columnist. And I have to give you props because you've brought us some amazing guests, including Hugh Jackman and Andrew Lloyd Webber. And you brought
Patti LuPone.
You brought us Clive Davis, and you brought us Valerie Simpson yesterday. And we're going to replay a little bit of that interview in the morning. But sometimes, you know, he comes in this morning and says, well, I was at a champagne tasting last night at Veuve Clicquot.
I was.
What the hell is that? You go to a champagne tasting? That's what you do?
Well, I was a plus one. I was a guest. My girlfriend works at Cosmopolitan.com, and she was invited. It's a lifestyle thing. She covers lifestyle issues and whatnot. And Veuve Clicquot, the fancy champagne maker, had a tasting of the new Veuve Clicquot Rosé at a fancy French restaurant. It was very good. And we were given the vintage rosé.
Well, all I know is I'm sitting at home in my room studying news stories, studying about North Korea.
Drinking your Metamucil while I'm sipping Veuve Clicquot.
How did you know?
Anyway,
do you have a cup of Ovaltine before you go to bed, Len?
Stop. Will you stop? Also, the Clive Davis and Valerie Simpson, who we had on yesterday. Now, Valerie Simpson, of course. She wrote that. This is her with her late husband, Nick Simpson.
Ashford and Simpson, great songwriting team. Ashford and Simpson,
and now she's in Chicago in a limited run playing Mama Morton. That was the part played by Queen Latifah in the movie Chicago.
Got a little motto, always sees me through. When you're good to Mama, Mama's good to you.
So we did an interview with her yesterday.
Yeah, it turns out that Valerie and I were at a cocktail party at Clive Davis's house.
Of course,
sipping Veuve Clicquot. And that's how she wound up coming to Broadway.
Clive brings people together in odd ways. And he came up to me in the cocktail hour of this party at his home and said, you know, Alicia Keys is supposed to be here, but she can't. And she was going to do two songs. So will you get up and do something? So I got up and I, you know, talked about how original and authentic he is, sat down and played our song, Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing, into Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Yeah, I remember.
And then this guy comes over to me and he says, you know, I love what you just did, and I can imagine you on Broadway in my show. I said, well, what is your show? And he said, Chicago.
Wow.
I'm like, really? You know, and it just seems so far-fetched. This is your lane, you know, Michael, not my lane. So
I know. It was Barry Weissler. Barry Weissler and his wife, Fran, are the producers of Chicago. And, well, they scored a real coup to have you on. Any nervousness about acting on the stage? We know you can sing, but how about the acting part, Valerie?
I opened on the 12th already, so I've been there for 2 weeks. I was so scared. I was ready to get in my car and drive away as I was waiting to go on stage. That's how nervous I was. Never felt like that pressure before. So, but it's going great. They're so nice to me. They, you know, it's just a miracle. I sit there and pinch myself every night. Like, how did I get here? I got here from a party.
Hey, Valerie, take us back to those early Motown days. When did you and Nick first meet Berry Gordy? How did he bring you into the Motown family?
Well, actually, someone came to New York scouting talent for Motown, and fortunately, our names were given, and we got to actually meet Barry on our first trip. They heard our demos and told us to come on in, and you know, he was like an amazing man because he was a musician and a writer himself. So you were being critiqued by somebody who really knew what he was talking about.
What was the song
that made all the difference?
And what was the first song that you and Nick did for him?
Well, actually, he told us he wasn't really that interested in the kind, because we had just had Let's Go Get Stoned. That wasn't what he did. He had a whole different roster of artists. So we went back to New York, and then we came back with Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing. Ain't No Mountain High Enough, which you couldn't hardly turn that down.
Okay, wait, what's that? Don't, say no more. How great is that? Classic song.
Oh, my goodness.
Did he want that song for Diana Ross right away?
No. We wrote it for Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell first. And then when Diana was getting ready to go solo and leave the Supremes, we redid it for her, you know, with talking and a lot more drama, as you well just heard. And so, you know, and it became a number one hit all over again.
Yeah. And you and Nick, how did you guys write a song together? Just sit at the piano and go back and forth? How did you work together?
Well, you know, I'm a pretty good piano player.
And you're excellent, yeah.
I can almost feel the words coming out of his mouth. And, you know, and we were just on the right vibe together. And so we tried to, you know, trick ourselves into writing. You don't want to think you're working. So we would just let the thing flow and let the muse enter the room. Sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't, but it worked more often than not.
It sure did. And I've asked other guests the same thing. It must be an enormous sense of accomplishment that songs you've written will be known forever as classics, Valerie.
I tell you, Len, that is like the most rewarding thing. You know, Ain't No Mountain is 50 years old this year, which is pretty amazing. And still, I make more money from it now than I did back in the
day. That's good.
So that's so it's an amazing thing and a legacy I didn't expect to have.
Cash is still good. That was Valerie Simpson. She was on with us late yesterday, and we thought, you know, for our early listeners who might not have had a chance to, I really enjoyed that.
She's great, Valerie. I love Valerie. Really, she's fine. I like it. You know, it's amazing, though. Can you imagine if you're a successful songwriter and you've written, well, she just said she makes more money now from Ain't No Mountain High Enough, but then you add in Solid as a Rock, you add in I'm Every Woman, which she
ain't wrote. Nothing like the real thing, baby.
How about that one?
Reach Out and Touch.
Oh, man. Great stuff.
And you know where they make their money now? Because these songs are now used in commercials all over the place. That's where the money pours in there, Len.
Valerie Simpson.
Ashford and Simpson, a great partnership like Berman and Riedel.
There you go, for the time being. Everything in life is just for now, I tell you that.
Where are the royalties?
Yeah, right. And she's now on Broadway in Chicago. The full interview on our website, 710WOR.com/Len and Michael. Coming up, Giants say they're not looking to trade Odell Beckham Jr., but we'll tell you why he could still be somewhere else next season. And we've got some sounds from a baseball game that you never get to hear. That's coming up next, plus your next chance is $1,000 after the news at 7:05. Right now, Bernie Vider has traffic.
Live from New York City,
Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning
on 710 WOR.
Good morning, everybody. At 6:54 on a Wednesday morning, a lot of sports action here. We are going to be giving away Mets tickets at 7:30. Len's personal,
tickets. Any tickets.
They're in the parking lot. Wait till 8:30 when I give away my tickets. They're the prime
seats. Boy, you really start tumbling early. I was being nice. I was complimenting you on all the great
Broadway
guests.
You want to stick around for my tickets at 8:30, Len's tickets.
They're not bad. They're very good seats.
I'm sure they are. And Mets manager Mickey Callaway is going to be with us at 7:40. So you want to stick around for all things Mets in the next hour.
Yeah. And by the way, I know you're a big baseball fan, Michael.
I love the Mets.
I know you were excited when you said, well, we're going to talk a couple of sports stories here. Because when it comes to sports, Michael Riedel just can't get enough. So
this is what happens when it comes to sports on this show. The next segment coming up is going to be sports. Len bolts to grab Joe Bartlett in here because he knows he needs Joe to have a conversation about sports because he thinks the Broadway guy can only talk about the Phantom of the Opera, so I can't have a conversation about sports with Riedel. I got to get Bartlett in here.
Now that's short-sighted, Len.
It's a little bit more involved. Don't you jump on his bandwagon. You listen to his crap and you're believing it?
I'm sure people thought I couldn't talk about sports because I came from, you know, talk radio and Joan Hamburg.
Staten Island.
What's wrong with that? What was the diss on Staten Island
I
about?
Say, but Natalie, I knew you back in the Joan Hamburg days, and you were a Broadway baby, too. You love going to Broadway shows.
I do. See, I'm very well-rounded.
Okay. This is for Natalie and Riedel. Who is the biggest Giants fan on the staff?
Joe Bartlett.
So that's why I wanted him to come in and help discuss Odell Beckham Jr. Because he's a huge fan, and he's very vested in this. Don't pick on me, Riedel. Or you, Natalie. I don't pick on you.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, anyway.
All right, guys, go at it. Have your little sports segment. No. Natalie and I will just sit on the sidelines
here. This is good.
And that's a sports reference. Sidelines, Len. Did you get that?
Yeah. Coming in from the bullpen, Bo Deedle. I sent this to Natalie yesterday, and she thought it was really good. And I didn't know if it was translate to radio, so we also have it up on our website at 710WOR.com/Len and Michael. Did you hear about this yesterday, Joey? They put ESPN was doing the Red Sox-Cubs game.
Mm-hmm.
They put a microphone on Mookie Betts, the right fielder,
during
the game. Now, this has never happened before.
Why did they do this? Is this something new they're trying to do?
Yeah, well, he could do it in meaningless games.
What happens if he swears because he drops the ball or something?
Well, that's ESPN's problem.
We have a delay. Yeah, but
it gives you a sense of what's going on in the game.
Ooh,
it's kind of cool.
It was kind of cool, but it's kind of strange seeing a guy standing on outfield chit-chatting.
I know. So he's standing at right field. Chris Bryant's at the plate for the Cubs, and this is Mookie Betts out in right field, right during the game, talking with the ESPN announcers.
Yeah, I mean, it's etiquette, bowling etiquette. You can't.
Right. Uh-oh. There you go.
I ain't getting this one, boys.
So let me explain what happened there.
He's supposed to be playing the game. They got him wired up to talk to the reporters in the booth. This is not a good idea.
And then the ball gets hit to his left, a real screamer, down to the corner. And he goes, well, listen again. Uh-oh, I ain't getting this one, boys.
Yeah, I mean, it's etiquette, bowling etiquette. You can't.
Right. Uh-oh. There you go.
I ain't getting this one, boys.
Get on your horse.
Don't miss the cutoff.
I love how the guys in the booth are laughing at him.
The guys in the booth, see, that's what makes it illegal. They were giving him good instruction. They were saying, don't miss the cutoff, man. So they were telling him, they were instructing him where to throw the ball.
They were coaching from the booth.
Is
that a problem if they're coaching from the booth?
Oh, this is an exhibition game. It's a meaningless game.
Are we going to talk about Beckham or what?
It's a triple. Oh, yeah, Beckham.
You dragged me in here.
All right.
Anyway, though, you do need to see the video. It's very fun.
Go look at the video.
It's on our website.
710WOR.com/Lennon Michael. And here's general manager of the Giants, Dave Gettleman, talking about Odell Beckham Jr.
Every decision we make will be in the best interest of the New York Football Giants.
All right? I want you guys to understand something. I'm not going to discuss any aspects of contracts. I'm not going to talk timelines. I'm not going to talk progress. I'm not going there. I didn't do it in Carolina. I ain't doing it up here.
All right. Wow. This general manager
is pretty tough.
So what do you think? Do you think this is all just the contract negotiation with Beckham, Joe?
I think they're sending a message to Beckham, yeah, that you know, you got to behave, number one. And number two is we're not necessarily going to plop down $50 to $60 million on you. First of all, he was injured last year. Not quite sure whether or not he's up to, you know, he can play. He probably can. And now the Daily News is saying that he has told, supposedly, players at the Rams in L.A. that he'd like to
play. Well, that sounds like negotiating to
me. I think so, yeah.
Well, what about this? The pictures of him with having pizza and drugs?
Old news, he says.
Welcome to football. Yeah. Hey, this is Giants coach Pat Shurmur.
He's an outstanding football player, and, you know, he's on our team right now, and so that's how I'm moving forward as a coach.
They are expecting him to show up, you know, for their next drills. So,
well, not necessarily. We don't have a contract.
Well, but they're expecting him to show up. He has a contract.
Well, that's true. He does. Yeah.
Oh, he's under contract.
Yep.
But there's talk that he won't show up at all until he gets a new contract. But
I don't want to lose him. I mean,
they've just changed the rules a little bit for a catch, which is going to help Beckham and everyone else who's a wide receiver.
By the way, the Patriots would have lost at Super Bowl if that rule were.
Okay.
Very exciting stuff, guys. Thanks a lot. All right.
sincere.
Why isn't President Trump punching back? He's gone silent after Stormy Daniels. And also, who's going to pay for his wall? Plus, your next chance at $1,000 is coming up after the 7 o'clock news.
Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning on 710 WOR.
Good morning, everybody. Silence, Len. Silence from...
me? You want me to be silent? It's a radio show. I'm not going to sit here silent.
Silence, Len, from the president on Stormy Daniels.
That is true.
He tweets about everything, but he has not tweeted anything.
Well, he didn't tweet anything yesterday
Stormy
at all.
Stormy Daniels' interview with Anderson Cooper on 60 Minutes. And what did Sarah Huckabee Sanders say? We've answered the questions. We're moving on. That's it. We have nothing more to say, Len, even though you're wondering why Trump doesn't sit down with Anderson Cooper and give his blow-by-blow, so to speak, account of his night with Stormy Daniels.
Sometimes he chooses to specifically engage and punch back, and sometimes he doesn't.
No punching back, but he did tweet this morning three times. The first one was about the Second Amendment. He says it'll never be repealed.
Well, that is because former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, in an editorial in the New York Times this morning, says what I think all you liberals really believe, what you really want, is to repeal the Second Amendment. And you get around it by saying, no, we don't want to get rid of the Second Amendment. We just want to have bans on assault weapons and raise the age limit to buy these kind of things.
Yes, check.
But what's behind it is the slow, steady march to repeal the Second Amendment. And at least John Paul Stevens has the guts to come out and the candor to come out and say, yeah, that's what we have to do. Repeal the Second Amendment. Where the battle should be fought.
What are you, a card-carrying NRA member? Blowhard.
I'm not a member of the NRA, believe in the Second Amendment.
So I didn't say get rid of the Second Amendment, but I do agree that times have changed. And the
Here
reason
we go.
The Second
Slippery slope. Len is starting down the slippery slope to repeal of the Second Amendment.
That's not true. We'll discuss later. Trump also tweeted a couple of times about...
Changing the subject, are you, Len?
Well, that's what Trump has done by these tweets. First about the Second Amendment, and then two about Korea. His last tweet a few minutes ago, he received a message last night from Xi Jinping of China that his meeting with Kim Jong-un went well. That secret train was Kim Jong-un from North Korea visiting China.
The Orient Express.
Yeah, it was. Kim looks forward to his meeting with me. In the meantime, and unfortunately, maximum sanctions and pressure must be maintained at all costs. So he's tweeting about the Second Amendment and Korea, but nothing about Stormy Daniels.
Well, these are the big deals. I mean, Stormy Daniels is a distraction. Dealing with North Korea and its nuclear weapons is his job, and that's what he should be doing, all right?
Okay.
Also in the big three, we had a heartbreaking funeral yesterday for firefighter Michael Davidson, 37 years old, who was killed in that blaze up in Harlem last week. Big turnout, Len.
These were some of the sounds outside St. Patrick's. Just totally silent, Fifth Avenue, thousands standing in respect as the one of the fire engines was used as a hearse to carry his casket.
And left behind four kids, Brooke, 7 years old, Joseph, 6 years old, Emily, three, and Amy, one. And there's, again, I keep going back to this picture in the Post, a really touching, beautiful picture of a fireman giving Michael's hat to his daughter, three-year-old Emily, with the mothers holding Emily there. So I thought his brother, Eric, spoke very movingly at the funeral. Let's hear what Eric has to say.
I'm never going to get to celebrate a Mets or Jets championship with my brother. But then I paused and quickly realized that we could have lived till we were 100 years old and still probably not have got to see that happen.
Brought some, yeah.
That's kind of funny.
He brought some levity to it, of course. You know, he's a firefighter. Their father's a firefighter. So, yeah, very, very moving. And
but on a serious note. I mean, that was just a levity. But here's the brother on a serious note.
Yeah.
In May of 2003, when he joined the FDNY, Michael became a hero of the people of New York City. But to me, Michael has been my hero my entire life.
And he's also a firefighter, as is their dad.
Yeah, he was the nozzle man, so he was the first into that blaze up there in Harlem on 773 St. Nicholas Avenue. Now, also part of our big three here, wouldn't you know it, one of the tenants in that building has filed a $7 million lawsuit against Ed Norton's production company. Now, Ed Norton was making a movie in that building, and Erica Gruz, who lives on the fourth floor of the building, has fired has filed this lawsuit against Norton's company, saying that there was a lot of highly flammable equipment in the basement. But here's what I don't get, Len. So far, it has not been determined if that equipment caused the fire. There, of course, is going to be flammable equipment on a movie set. They've got cables. They've got lights. They've got generators. It's the standard equipment you have on a movie set. So how can you file a suit against just having basic equipment that you need on the set of the movie?
Yeah, I guess the lawyer will make the case that even if they determine it was a boiler or something else, that these flammable materials made it worse.
But the materials are just what you have on the set of a movie. It's some ambulance, in this case, fire engine chasing lawyer who's so rounding up the tenants, and let's go after Ed Norton because he's a Hollywood star. So his production company has money, so let's go after him. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And rounding out the big three, I can't get enough of the hatred between de Blasio and Governor Cuomo. Out of nowhere, and this shocked a lot of Democratic politicians yesterday, Cuomo just comes out and says, yeah, I think de Blasio should have been charged with accepting this money from Mr. Singh and this Mangano trial that's going on, which has now become the de Blasio trial, because he's claiming he funneled money to candidates at de Blasio's request using straw donors and whatnot. And de Blasio says, well, this was looked into, nothing there. And Cuomo says, well, actually, maybe it wasn't looked into enough. Maybe there is something there. He is really going after de Blasio.
Yeah, and I'm
sure. But Cuomo's got his own problems, too.
Well, sure, I'm sure de Blasio feels the same way about Cuomo, but this is, to me, it's just so childish, and I don't know where it's going to get anybody. I mean, I don't think anyone comes off looking good in this kind of a feud. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I think the mayor's a boob, and I think the governor's a thug. I don't like either one of them.
Boob and a thug, but that's because they're Democrats, and you're like a far right-leaning Republican wacko.
No, I just don't like our communist mayor, de Blasio, and I don't like the thug governor, who is incredibly arrogant, who's condescending, and who's extremely unpopular in Albany.
All right, fine. Let's talk about the dress. Let's talk about the dress.
Apparently, are you a big Cuomo fan? Are you a Governor Cuomo fan?
I'm not a huge fan lately. I'm really not. I'm just because of stuff like this. I think some of it comes off as grandstanding when he goes to the housing authority buildings when the mayor's out of town. There's a lot of this one-upmanship. I don't think that's the way you govern. I think you walk softly and carry a big stick. Okay?
Put aside your petty differences, boys, but they won't.
All right, talk about the dress. Come on.
Oh, yeah. All right, so yesterday, a fellow porn star, a friend of Stormy Daniels, said that Stormy has the dress she wore.
I am unaware about text messages or pictures or any type of evidence she might have that would fit on a disc. All I know is that Stormy still has the dress that she wore from that night.
Mm-hmm. And she kept that for what reason?
Maybe a keepsake. Maybe it's because it's actual proof I can only speculate the things that may be on that dress, especially if it's never been washed.
So can I. Hamburger, drippings.
Yes. Diet Coke stains.
Yeah,
that was Alana Evans, an adult film actress and friend of Stormy Daniels. But it turns out that is fake news, Len, because Stormy Daniels' lawyer tweeted, we don't have the Monica Lewinsky type dress.
Oh, that's sad. I really
am. So wait a minute. So do you think they got duped by having this woman on, that she really had nothing to say, so she made something up and they went with it?
Well, women do things like that, Natalie?
I'm shocked.
An adult film star would do something like that?
Why did this have to come down to women? But anyway.
I mean, but the lawyers come out and said, no, there's no dress. I wonder what this lawyer has. He was teasing us with, a CD, a video, all this stuff he keeps saying he has, and none of it was in the 60 Minutes interview. None of it, Len.
Yeah, that's right, especially the CD. I was hoping there'd be some.
But then he came
out the next morning and said there's a lot more evidence, but
this
we never saw
lawyer it. He's on CNN and MSNBC all the time. He's loving the limelight as much as Stormy Daniels is. And so far, he has come up with very little.
All right.
Well, and you gotta admit that.
Yeah, Len, admit that.
Okay. God, I feel like this is the Inquisition every morning with all you people. I'm just sitting here minding my own business. I wandered in to do a news talk show.
What has the lawyer come up with, Len? What has he come up with? What tangible evidence has he come up with to prove that there was a love night between Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels? There's no dress. He shows a videotape. We don't know. A videotape that could be, that could be Beauty and the Beast or something like that.
Well, I guess the $130,000.
Well, $130,000 does do something.
Yeah, that's
she accepted $130,000. She accepted it.
Yeah, but that's just because you always settle cases just to make them go away, even if they're not true. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Wink, wink. Oh, and you were all excited about the Juanita Broderick quote.
Yeah, well, Juanita Broderick was asked by Sean Hannity, of course.
Of course. Stormy's lawyer wasn't on with Sean? I'm shocked.
Sean wants to know, legitimate question. Juanita has a book out called You'd Better Put Some Ice on That, which is allegedly what Bill Clinton said after Juanita Broderick says he raped her. And Sean wants to know, how come Anderson Cooper doesn't have Juanita Broderick on 60 Minutes to ask about the allegation that Clinton raped her?
And she said?
She said, it's because I'm not a porn star.
Correct.
She said, I'm a hardworking nurse.
Yeah, if I were a porn star, they'd put me on television. That's what Juanita Broderick said.
Did Clinton have any things with porn stars? He must have.
Well, who doesn't?
He must have.
Wouldn't you? I mean, porn stars are right up Bill Clinton's alley.
I think Bartlett's had a thing with a porn star.
No, who hasn't? Not really? That's not fair. That's not fair. Clinton must have had a thing with a porn star. So
somewhere.
We shall see.
Somewhere out there. We shall see.
Hey, a blistering report about how the New York City Police Department handles sex crimes is in the papers today. And the police commissioner is fighting back. That's coming up next. Plus, your chance at $1,000 is coming up at 8:05 on 710 WOR. But now let us go to Bernie Biter with the traffic.
Well, 7:24, which means 6 minutes until go time. Our first Met ticket giveaway today. My personal seats.
In the parking lot.
No, they're not. They're great
my
seats.
I'm giving away my seats at 8:30, and my seats are better than your seats, Len.
This is the fourth week of the show, and you are so insufferable already. I mean, my goodness.
Yeah, why don't you read that tweet from one of our listeners that you love much that you were so eager to read to after the show yesterday.
This comes from Nelly. Len, I can't listen to your show anymore until you get rid of that Michael Riedel. I can't stand his voice. He's a typical pushy Republican Trump supporter who thinks he knows it all and is so full of himself. Watch out for him or he'll take over the show.
Well, she's got a point there in that last part, Len. We got Bo Deedle coming up, and I think Riedel and Deedle in the morning sounds pretty good to me.
It's a great sound to it. It really does. And, of course, Mickey Callaway, the Mets manager. We really like him. He's been on a couple of times already. Coming up at 7:40, so tomorrow's opening day, we'll have the manager live. Now, breaking overnight, and then, of course, in a big story in the papers today about there's been an internal investigation in NYPD, and they're claiming that the Special Victims Division is understaffed, undertrained. All these sex crimes are going on. They've gone up to, 6,000 cases have nearly doubled in the last decade, and the staffing remains stagnant. They only have 67 detectives, and they can't investigate them all, and it's really, it's not working out well for victims. That's what they're claiming.
It says 67 investigators to handle 5,661 sex crime cases in 2017. I mean, how many of those can you really handle? Just a handful.
Yeah, and they have a lot more handling homicide cases and a lot fewer homicide cases. Now, this is the Department of Investigation Commissioner Mark Peters.
There are only 67 detectives assigned to do adult sex crimes with a caseload of over 5,000. NYPD's own internal documents state that acquaintance rape will not always be enhanced, which means get post-arrest investigation by SVD detectives. Instead, it'll be sent to precincts where they don't have the training.
So they're saying the lesser cases, Michael, like date rape and things like that, are just the victims are getting the short end for sure.
Yeah, there's an interesting column by Jane Manning in the Post today. She's an advocate for victims, and she said she's witnessed the devastating consequences for real victims. In one case that she was involved in, a detective, an SVD detective, opened an interview with a rape victim by asking her, quote, "How often do you cheat on your husband?"
Oy.
That's pretty terrible. Pretty terrible stuff there. So.
You know, I'm just going to throw this out there. If during the course of the morning, if there's a woman who's had a problem and has taken it to police and is getting nowhere because of this kind of situation, you know, let us know. I mean, you don't have to use your real name, but it's 800-321-0710. Do you think there's some validity to that story? Give us a call.
Yeah. What is Police Commissioner James O'Neill?
Well, obviously pushing back.
Yeah. The constant second guessing. And the many people out there who think they can do your job better than you can, you rise to the occasion each and every day.
Well, he went on to say,
each complaint of rape we take seriously when we fully investigate each and every one of them.
So police is pushing back.
I should hope so. And remember also, I don't know if this falls into the purview here, but let's not forget, with Harvey Weinstein, when the Italian model went to Cyrus Vance with her complaints against Weinstein, and they decided not to look into that. Remember that, Len?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, this is an issue that is going to boil up. But I heard another quote from the police department that they're SVU gets a lot of notoriety because of the TV show.
Yes,
but they're claiming the New York Police Department SVU is the best in the business. So,
well, we shall see. I mean, caseload overload is the headline in the Post today.
Yeah, go ahead.
We were talking about Stormy Daniels whatnot. Interesting editorial, op-ed piece by S.E. Cupp in the Daily News today. It's on the front of the Daily News. Dump Trump. She's telling Melania, don't make the same mistake Hillary did with Bill. Leave that cheating lout of a hubby of yours. Front page of the Daily News. Well, I think Melania's sort of out the door already. I mean, you seldom see her with Trump. And whenever they are in the shot together, you don't see them holding hands. She usually walks ahead of him. She gets off the plane before him. She may be on her way out the door.
It's very possible, and I wouldn't blame her. And this has nothing to do with the Clintons. I'm just talking about this particular case. I wouldn't blame her. I mean, she's got to be humiliated, and you know, she obviously has a young son to take care of.
I don't remember any liberal columnist calling for Hillary to leave Bill when it emerged that he was diddling around with Monica Lewinsky in the Oval Office. Do you, Len?
Stan.
Was Gloria Steinem out there calling for Hillary to dump her cheating husband? No.
What's the song? Stand by Your Man? Is that it?
Yes.
The Good Wife? Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I don't. Listen, I hate it every time something comes up with one president, they bring up another president. I'm just talking about this one in particular. I feel for Melania.
I do, too. I feel
and
sorry
I wouldn't
for her.
Blame her at all if she walked out the door under these circumstances.
I wouldn't either.
All right. Now's your chance to win my personal seats. You get a pair of tickets. See, the Mets take on the Phillies April the 2nd at Citi Field. So this is Mets-Phillies, April 2nd. My personal tickets. Be caller number 19. Caller 19, 800-321-0710. You'll be the winner and purchase tickets at Mets.com/tickets. Time for latest news headlines. Good morning to you, Joe Bartlett.
Hello, Len. A man described as a violent deportee is on the loose after escaping custody at Kennedy Airport. The unidentified man was being escorted by ICE agents from one flight to another and was able to escape, fled in a taxi. Flyers at Kennedy, a little worried.
Unsettling, you know, as we're getting ready to leave for vacation. I don't know. They can't control everything, but yeah, it is scary.
A little unsettling, this man previously arrested on a weapons charge.
He's dangerous, this guy.
Violent, absolutely. President Trump still hasn't directly addressed the Stormy Daniels interview 3 days after she claimed they had a one-night stand. The White House press secretary, Sarah Sanders, says the president doesn't have time to respond to everything it's said about him.
I didn't say he punches back on every single topic. If he did, he would probably be addressing a lot of the stories that most of you write every single minute of every single day. He also has a country to run, and he's doing a great job with that.
And she says the president has denied the allegations, and there's nothing more to add.
There you have it. Case closed.
Exactly. So let's move on to something else. The president tweeting a pledge for the Second Amendment this morning.
Yes.
President tweeted, the Second Amendment will never be repealed. His tweet comes after retired Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens made a suggestion about that in an op-ed yesterday.
Doddering old fool.
Well, he made some good points, but I no, but wait.
Oh, he admits it. Glenn admits he wants the Second Amendment repealed.
I do not. The Second Amendment is sacrosanct.
Oh, you don't believe. You do not believe
that. Yes, I do. What are you calling me a liar?
Yes, I don't believe. There's no sincerity in your voice about
Joe, he's calling me a liar.
Do you believe him, Joe?
I'm hurt by those allegations.
Do you believe it when he says the Second Amendment is sacrosanct? Do you really believe him?
Come on, Joe.
But you say, Len, there are too many guns.
There are too many guns, and there are a lot of things you can
do
to modify.
How do you get rid of guns?
Well, you have to, first of all, get rid of some classes of guns, like assault weapons and military-grade weapons and large magazines. You've heard the litany, and move up the age and
come on,
fix
say,
the background checks.
Come on, say, no. You want to get rid of guns? Get rid of the Second Amendment. They don't have a big gun problem in Europe because they don't have a Second Amendment, so that's get rid of the Second Amendment.
Well, that happens to be true, but no. I say leave the Second Amendment. Make it much, much tougher to get a gun. That's all.
All right. That sounds rational, Len.
Thank you.
Okay, finally here.
Are you being sarcastic?
Me? A lawyer for DMX, the rapper, wants to play some of his songs at his sentencing today. DMX, his real name is Earl Simmons, according to his attorney, may be too emotional to speak at his sentencing, so they want his music to speak for him.
Y'all gonna make me lose my mind.
Y'all gonna make me lose my mind.
Well, I'd give him life for that. I mean, play some more of that.
They should play Jailhouse Rock. That's what they should
the
play.
The more they play, the worse the sentence
that's
will become.
That's gonna relax him? I don't think
The attorney says the music may help the court understand him genuinely in his voice. There's nothing he can say, and he would be too emotional to address the court today.
Sounds like a criminal in that song. Put him away.
He is facing sentencing for tax fraud, failing to pay close to $2 million in taxes.
Okay.
Y'all gonna make me lose my mind.
Well, then that would mitigate the sentence.
You're gonna
right
make
there.
Me do the time. All You're right. gonna make me do the time.
Thanks, Joey B.
You're welcome.
It's Open the A tomorrow, and we're excited because coming up next, right here on 710 WOR, the manager of the New York Mets, Mickey Callaway, will join us live. And your next chance is $1,000 coming up at 8:05. But right now, let's go to traffic and Bernie Viter.
Good morning, everybody. At 7:40, big day tomorrow. It's the opener at Citi Field. Len,
it is
the Mets. You and I are going to be there.
We will be there. We'll talk to Mickey Callaway in 2 seconds. We want to congratulate Kieran Dunn of Yonkers, won my Mets tickets, and Michael's personal seats we'll give out at 8:30. And, of course, we can't have Mickey Callaway on without playing...
I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
Mickey you.
Mickey me.
Well, I'm going to introduce you, Mickey. I'm going to introduce you to Michael Riedel. Michael doesn't know that you were named after Mickey Mantle, my hero, and that song was a Teresa Brewer song back in the 50s.
So. Len loves his dopey old songs. You just got to put up with it. All right.
Yeah,
so, hey, you're making your big debut here tomorrow. Are you ready to go? Any butterflies in the stomach for tomorrow, Mickey?
You know, we are. We're ready to go. And, I'm a little anxious, mainly just to get out there and see what the guys can do. You know, I feel like our spring training prepared everyone to go out there and do their job. And, you know, I'm really excited about getting out there and showing our fans, a solid baseball team that's going to go out there and play the game the right way.
What were you most impressed with by the team during the spring training?
You know what? Just really who they are. And everybody just wants to win baseball games. Because, you know, I came in and our coaching staff came in, and we're going to ask some different things out of these guys than they've probably been asked to do before. And everyone to a man just said, you know what, I'll hit wherever, I'll play wherever, I just want to win games. That was the most impressive thing.
Can you give me a specific thing you want out of these guys?
Win.
You know what, the one thing that we want is to go out there, play the game with respect, play the game the right way, and if we do those things and we're fundamentally sound, we're going to be very good because we have the personnel.
Mickey, I know in spring training, and I know how the players, you know, it's some of it's a grind. I know it sounds like fun in Florida, but they don't. Some of them go through the motions a little bit. You don't play nine innings. You don't have your A team out there at all times. Are you saving some bullets, so to say, in your arsenal? Are there some things that maybe you'll be doing that you really haven't shown so far in games? I mean, you know, fans with maybe more speed, more stolen bases, more hit and run, stuff like that.
You know, I think we want to be selectively aggressive when it makes sense. But we have a team that can hit some homers. We have guys at the bottom of our lineup that are fast, that can steal some bases. You know, and I think if we put all their strengths to use, then you're going to see a really good baseball team out there on the field. You know, spring training is kind of tough because guys aren't playing nine innings. And, you know, half the spring they're playing five or six. So, you know, you're kind of like, oh, man, what are we doing here? But, you have to take care of them. They know what they're doing. We have a lot of veterans. You know, the younger guys played a little bit more, which they needed to. The veteran guys, they got in, got their work, and got out. And you have to rely on them to let them know when they're ready. And that's what we did, and everybody feels in a really good spot coming in.
All right, Mickey, do you have the starting lineup for us?
Not yet. I probably need to tell them first.
Cutting it a little close there, aren't you?
That was a good try, though.
I tried to sneak it in there and catch you off guard.
Wants to tell the players first. I think you touched on something there, Mickey. I think the communications is so huge. I mean, you have a lot of fragile egos in there. I mean, every little thing that happens, you got to tell the player first. He doesn't want to hear about it from the media.
No, you definitely do, and I think that they deserve that. You know, it's their career. We're here to support it and give them, you know, everything they possibly can to succeed as far as resources, and we're always going to communicate with them.
We're on the air with Mets manager Mickey Callaway, and I know, Mickey, you're such a team guy, but I want you to, if you can, a little bit address the fact that you're making your managerial debut in New York City. Full house, Citi Field. If you could share some of your personal thoughts,
you know what? It's gonna feel real good to me. Obviously, you know my parents are coming, my family's all gonna be there, so that'll be a neat moment. I think that by the time the first pitch is thrown, I'll just be focused on the game, hopefully. But you know, I am a team guy, and this is a team game. And I'm just really excited to go out there and accomplish something special with these young men we have.
And just think, you may get cheered tomorrow when you come out to the baseline for the introductions.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Mickey, in your own career when you were playing, when did the moment come where you thought, you know, I'd rather get into managing and coaching?
You know what? I was probably too good of a self-evaluator. I knew that I wasn't a very good pitcher. I knew I didn't have great stuff. So it probably came a little bit earlier in my career than most. But, you know, I knew I loved the game. I knew I knew the game and the right way to play the game. So I really wanted to play as long as I could just to make sure I had as much knowledge as I could. And, you know, I feel like playing for 13 years professionally allowed me to do that.
Hey, Mickey, before you run, Matt Harvey had a good spring and came out saying we expect big things. And, you know, you got Syndergaard tomorrow, and he looks to be in great shape. And you got DeGrom and Mats. I mean, you could have a pretty solid pitching staff. That's going to be the key, obviously.
Yes, it is. And they are in a really good spot, both physically and mentally. Now, things can always change. You know, you can't control everything. But we can do everything we possibly can to prepare on a daily basis to have them as physically ready as possible and is mentally ready. And I feel like Dave Island did such a good job of that this spring with all of those pitchers. And if they stay healthy and they stay out there and attack the zone the right way, their stuff is going to play. And we're going to have a really good team. So we're really looking forward to that.
All right. Well, Mickey, not to add to the pressure on you tomorrow, but Len and I are going to be there. So we expect you to deliver the goods.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, you know what? With that added extra pressure, that's going to be tough. But you're going to be a fun ball game, that's for sure.
Thanks, all Mickey. Right. Appreciate
Thanks.
It.
Thanks, Mickey Callaway. We wish
I really
you...
appreciate it, guys.
Yeah. All right. Good luck.
We'll see you tomorrow. Wish you the best of luck. It's going to be a big
Thanks,
day.
Luck.
Big day, and Len, you and I are going to be there.
Yeah, we will. That's great. And he mentioned Dave Island. He's the pitching coach. But let's say goodbye to Mickey. Yeah.
I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
Mickey you.
Mickey me.
Goodbye to.
Well, he was that Mickey Mantle. Was Len, actually in that song.
Len's going back to his childhood.
No, no, that's Mickey Calloway's. He was named after him.
Yes. All right. Hey, what's going on between Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio? Those guys hate each other. And does the governor? Does he hate the mayor so much he wants to see him behind bars? We'll tell you about that when we return. Plus, your next chance at $1,000 is coming up at 8:05 on 710 WOR. Hey, you never have to miss Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning. Stay connected and listen anywhere with the free iHeartRadio app. Your favorite radio stations plus unlimited streaming music available now all the time on the iHeartRadio app and at iHeartRadio.com. And now let's check in on traffic with Bernie Bider.
It's 7:54, the day before opening day for the Mets. Good morning, everyone. We have more Mets tickets coming your way at 8:30. Michael's personal seats. And
They're better than your seats.
Yours are in the parking lot. Mine are.
Oh, stop. Anyway, we just had Mickey Callaway on, the Mets manager. Comes across very well. Comes across personable. Comes across as a communicator, which I think is great.
Yep.
I mean, he was a pitching coach in Cleveland.
Yep.
He's got a great pitching staff here if they all stay healthy. See, that's the thing. When he was talking about a lot of the players only played six innings in spring training, then they'll play every day. Now you got 162 games. And now you got nine innings. And and you know, Mets fans are, you know, walking on eggshells when it comes to injuries, and hopefully they'll be in better shape.
So I know you're the manager. You're watching your own team, but you've got to be keeping your eye on the other teams and your potential rivals
to
see what they're doing. And then don't you got to match players up against the other players and figure out what their lineup's going to be?
Well,
it's a chess game.
It is on an individual basis. And as far as the other teams, you just look ahead on your immediate schedule and you see if a certain pitcher might match up better in a certain ballpark or against a certain team. But I think early in the season, most managers just stay with the rotation. Like, Syndergaard will pitch every fifth game, you know, and then, you know, and second will be DeGrom, and third will be either Mats or Harvey. I don't know what he decided. And it will be, he'll just go down the line like that and keep rotating it. Now, if someone's really hot and someone's struggling, he may skip a turn, and you'll have days off, and all that gets factored into it.
What can we pick up from his management style tomorrow as we're watching the game? What are you going to be as a legendary sports caster and analyst? What are you going to be looking at? What moves he's making tomorrow?
I always look at the little things. Now, one thing with relief pitching, he's already said he's not going to assign an inning to a player. A lot of these managers these days say, well, this pitcher is my seventh inning pitcher, this guy's my eighth inning, this guy's my... He's already said he's not going to do that, which I kind of like. What I'm going to look for is how he handles certain situations. Will he... You know, since I'm an old-time guy, I go back to fundamentals, like stealing bases, like hit and run, bunting. You know, can these guys, you know, most players can't even bunt anymore.
Why?
So, well, because
the lost art of bunting.
I guess it's like basketball too. They want to dunk or hit home runs, you know.
A bunt is very strategic at the right moment.
If you can bunt well, it's important. So I look at those things. Is he going to try to take an extra base? Will we see more stealing? And he hinted that the bottom of his lineup has a lot of speed. Those are the things I'll look at as a baseball fan, the little things he does. Sure, you want Cespedes to hit a three-run homer every time, and that would really help things out, but you look at the little stuff.
It's in the details where you can win the game.
Well, there you go. Well, absolutely. And it's in the details where your governor and your mayor, you have no idea what you're talking about, Real. But you're so proud of yourself.
He was talking
about? He's so proud of himself.
Did you feed him Len?
No, I was...
I did not feed him anything.
I thought I got away with it, and Bartlett comes in looking at me like, you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
But you did sell it well.
Sounded good. Yeah,
it's in the details. Well, what is it in the details? Tell me one business where it's not in the details.
I love my bunting question. You don't get a bunting question every day here.
Bunting are the flags they put up along the side of the stadium. That's what you know about bunting.
Oh, my God. It's showbiz, Barley. You came in and you drew back the curtain.
He nailed you. Well, when you had it, when you broke out with this big smile, you were so proud of yourself talking about bunting.
That was a problem, you know?
All right.
I'm going to keep my eye on those base steals going on tomorrow.
Base steals. Yeah. you check out those base steals. You look at the scorecard and see how many BSs there are for base steals. All right. So Cuomo de Blasio. Now, this is a story that just continues to intrigue you.
Every day.
Because you love Democrats fighting it up, right?
No question about it. The boob and the thug are going at it.
Is that nice?
They are
the boob and the thug?
De Blasio is a boob, and Cuomo is a condescending thug, which, by the way, is why, even as a Republican, I am supporting Cynthia Nixon's run against Andrew Cuomo, and I have a feeling there's something about her. She's just going to get under his skin. He's trying to play it cool now, not going to take the bait. He's not going to bully her, but I guarantee you he's going to snap at some point, and the thug gov is going to come out.
So I want to make a point here. You know, I'll occasionally tweak the president for something he wrote or tweeted or said.
Occasionally.
I don't call him names. I don't call him Mr. Orange Puss or whatever name.
Spank Me Donald?
I don't call him anything. What do you call him?
Spank Me Donald.
Spank Me Donald. I don't call him anything. You go at thugs and boobs. I'm respectful towards our president.
How can he be respectful to our boob mayor? Kidding me.
So
and
where's
the governor's
this,
a thug.
So where's this going?
What Cuomo's been saying, he says, you know, de Blasio allegedly got some money from Mr. Singh out there in Long Island. It's come out in the Mangano trial now. De Blasio says, investigated, old news. And then yesterday, Cuomo out of nowhere says, you know what, maybe we should take a closer look at it. Maybe charges should have been filed about de Blasio. Wow. That's how much he hates this guy, because de Blasio is behind Cynthia Nixon's candidacy.
And you can bet de Blasio feels the same way about Cuomo, that he should be charged with something because of corruption at Albany.
Well, tomorrow we'll probably be talking about what de Blasio says about Cuomo.
Knock him out, drag him out, fight.
Democrats are corrupt, Len. You know that.
Oh, sure. Everything's just peachy keen at the White House. Hey, coming up, two big stories. First of all, Kim Jong-un and the president tweeting about it today. This is really going to happen. Also, this controversial census thing. Are you allowed to ask if you're a citizen or not? And another chance to win $1,000 coming up after the news at 8 o'clock.